hope you enjoyed the Alaska Native stories from the archives of KNBA and the Anchorage Museum. The Storyteller Series is distributed by Native Voice One at nv1.org and hosted by Janar. This song is from the Generation CD of Aleutic Songs, available at aleuticmuseum.org. If you missed this show, you can hear the podcast at kbu.fm/stageandstudio. That's it for Stage and Studio. Till next time, I'm Dime Roberts.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Thank you, KBOO supporters, for helping us reach our end-of-the-year fundraising goal. KBOO only exists because of you, our KBOO community. So thank you for keeping these airwaves going and supporting volunteer-powered, community-supported radio.
You are tuned to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Andy Whoa-Whoa looks a scream, and him on my whoa-whoa-whoa. Andy Whoa-Whoa, silver scream, can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is photographer Christopher Rauschenberg. His show, Looking at India, is on now, January the 7th through the 30th at Elizabeth Leach Gallery in the Pearl District. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus again, Chris.
It's my pleasure.
Last time I had you on the show, it was January 2013. Your show was called Museum, and you were talking about a trip to St. Petersburg in Russia. Looking at India is basically the product of your trip to India, which you took in January 2020. So pre-COVID, I think. COVID was probably just news at the time, but didn't stop you moving around, which I guess was a blessing now you look back at it. So just tell us how the trip originated and briefly where you went in India.
Yeah, well, my wife and I travel a lot, but, you know, we're getting older. I'm 69. It's like, okay, well, we can go to Paris, we can go to Tokyo when we're 79, but we're not going to want to be trooping around India. So we sort of prioritized that and planned the trip. And started in the south and worked our way north. We went to Bangalore, then Mysore, Hampi, Mumbai, Jaisalmer, Jaipur, Agra, and Delhi. And just a taste, I mean, India is gigantic and full of fascinating things, and you can't do it in that short an amount of time any justice, but it was as long as we could be away, and so that's what we did. And the timing was good, as you say. Just a couple months later, India went into lockdown. You don't want to be locked down in an Airbnb in India somewhere. So we got in and out before the COVID hammer hit.
I'd say if I could travel anywhere, I would go to India. It's a place I've never been. Lots of my friends have told me about it. Partly the British history and partly its place in the modern world as sort of a booming mega country. What was it like, you know, riding a train in India? What class did you sit in, and how close to you know, Slumdog Millionaire did you get?
We didn't have a alarming time of any of it. We were in pretty good conditions all the time. I think we had a lot of time to just sort of walk around and get the feel of the place, which is what I like to do. We certainly spent a lot of time going, you know, we went to Agra, so we could go to the Taj Mahal and all that, and we did some of the sort of obvious things. Jaisalmer, one of the places we went, is not a place that people go to very often because it's not very easy to get there, you know, in terms of the transportation network. But we had a photographer who we were showing at Blue Sky Gallery, who was Indian, Manjari Sharma, and she told me, "Oh, you have to go to Jaisalmer." So I said, "Okay." Mm-hmm. So we put that on our agenda, and I had stumbled across some pictures of Hampi, and this amazing place where these sort of big boulders and temples sort of intermixed on this rocky landscape. I was like, okay, I have to go there. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of our schedules kind of juggled together from things that caught our eye or were recommended to us. My wife was very dubious about, you know, Taj Mahal sounds like a touristy thing, you know, do we really have to go there? And then every person that she talked to, every Indian person she talked to, said, oh yeah, no, you have to go there. Mm-hmm. and we went there before dawn. We went there and they opened it up right before dawn, and we were online to go in and the first batch of people. So we were there for the sunrise, and it was very beautiful. And mm-hmm. Janet, my wife, was like, oh yeah, everybody was right, we had to go there.
do you actually walk inside the building or just around the grounds?
Yeah, you're inside and outside. There's the Taj Mahal, and then there's two other buildings that are on either side of it. There's a mosque and there's an assembly building, and you can kind of walk around some in them. I mean, you don't have free access to every square inch of everything, but you get to be inside some and outside some.
So reading about your work, one phrase that jumped out was the buckets, not the Taj Mahal. The idea being you'll photograph the bucket rather than the big tourist cliche. Or, you know, the monument, you'll photograph the plastic bucket. Just explain that expression, and did you adhere to it?
Yeah, well, I mean, actually, when I was in India in the 70s, I was there briefly working on a project with my father, who's an artist, and I did photograph a bucket in India. But yeah, so for me, what's interesting when you travel, I mean, it's nice to, you know, go to Paris and go to the Louvre, but it's also nice to just kind of get the feel of the city and to understand how people live in a different way than we do here. And so for me, that's sort of more interesting. That's sort of the fabric of life is kind of the most interesting thing, and getting a sense of the things that you take for granted, this is the only way to do things, to discover actually it isn't the only way to do things, and that you have some choices that you can make about it. Mm-hmm. I came back from the India trip with thousands of pictures, and I, on the computer, I sort of narrowed it down to about 1,000 that seemed like I should go ahead and get little, I went to Walgreens and got little 1,000 little 4x6 inch prints, and then sorted through them, and I have a couple of different, I had pictures that were just single pictures, I had pictures that, and there's some of those in this show at Liz's. But the majority of the show is panoramic shots of various buildings. And actually, my first, when they said, what's the title of the show, I thought it was kind of funny to just call it Some Buildings in India, which sounds very sort of modest. And of course, one of the buildings is the Taj Mahal. And, you know, but I liked the idea that it was this sort of mixture of things. They said, well, that sounds a little too folksy. So we ended up with looking at India. But I didn't want to title it. I mean, I typically would title a show just the name of the country. But to have this show under the title India, it sounds like I'm making claims that I went there and now I understand everything about India and I'm explaining it to you. So I didn't want to make that ridiculous claim. Mm-hmm. So that's why we sort of tried to balance title, and looking at India seemed like a nice balancing point where it sounds ambitious but doesn't sound insanely ambitious.
So if the listeners go to elizabethleach.com/Christopher Rauschenberg, looking at India Works, throw some hyphens in there, you'll see a grid of the pictures. And the top left one, so what would be number one, is called Janta Manta Jaipur 1. And to me, it looks like a skateboard bowl. A white conical, it's a white kind of, you know, bowl in the ground with a fence around it. But it's made of two rectangular photos, you know, collaged together. I presume the prints laid next to each other, sort of overlapping, you know, in the kind of David Hockney style. When I look closely, it's not just the bowl, because these black stripes on the white background have something in them. They look like they're made of something else, or they're grooves or windows or something. It's a very confusing photo.
Yeah, if you were skateboarding there, you'd be in trouble. Yeah, what looks like black lines are actually holes, but they're observatories that were built a long time ago to monitor what's going on up in the sky.
Well, why did you slice this into two photos?
I shot it in two parts, because otherwise, to fit it all in the frame, you have to back away from it. And for me, making the panoramas without backing up means that as a viewer, you're standing in the middle of the place instead of looking at it from across the street, which is a very different feeling as for the viewer. So this is only two, so it's not so radical. I could have taken probably some kind of a picture with just one frame, but like the one that I was saying, that the overall view of the Jantar Mantar is, I think, six or seven shots put together. And one side of the picture might be looking due north and the other side might be looking due south. So you're really literally standing in the middle of the area that is being photographed.
Yeah. There's a picture called Jain Temple, Jaisalmer 2, 2020. Yeah. So that's another assembled archival inkjet print. It looks like, how many pictures?
I think that's six. And I used to actually, when I was a black and white photographer working in the darkroom, I would basically make a set of 16 by 20s and match the tones as well as I could, and then physically cut them up and adhesive them together with an archival adhesive. Now that I am working in color and working digitally, I'm printing them out on a single sheet of paper, so they're not physically assembled anymore. They're digitally assembled, which is nice, because I can make the tones match much more perfectly on the computer than I ever could in the darkroom, because you have the feedback. You can really see it as you go along and say, oh, this is just a touch too cyan, this frame relative to the other, or you can kind of make those kind of adjustments. And that's been really nice for me to be able to do that. And then it also means to make another print, it's just like printing another copy of a letter. You know, you hit Command P again. And of course you're using a much more expensive large piece of paper and more expensive ink. In the old darkroom days, when I was a black and white photographer, if I needed to make another print of something, I was basically starting over. So I'm a very enthusiastic user of the digital workspace workflow.
And this print is 20 by 60 inches, so it's pretty long, like five feet wide. You're shooting, it's the inside of a temple, and it's carved columns. There's some sort of gods on some of them.
Yeah.
It's a mixture of, like, what would you call that kind of patterning? And then, you know, a mixture of like figures and then sort of geometric patterns. But you're looking down these sort of corridors, and there's light coming in. The bright sunlight's coming into the temple. Everything's kind of white, kind of beige color. But you did this, you stood in one place and just turned your body, like, what, 270 degrees?
Yes, I stood in one place and turned. I would say this is probably only about 180 degrees, but I like the sense of the space, and because I'm not backing away from it, I mean, in the middle of the frame there's a deep space where you can sort of see through into the other side of the building, And so as a viewer, if your eyes move across the frame from left to right, you have things that are close up, and then suddenly you're far back, and then you're close up again, and then you're far back again and close up again. So it, for me, it feels very active for the viewer, like they're being an explorer. And one of the things that I noticed when I first started doing these put together panoramas was that that were made out of 16x20s, that the viewing distance was not the viewing distance for a, like this is 5 feet long, but if you were looking at something that was just a single image that was 5 feet, you'd back up away from it. And that I noticed that when people were looking at the put together panoramas, their viewing distance was as if they were looking at a 16x20, and they would actually physically walk along in front of the print back and forth. And I love that. I love the fact, I always want philosophically because I used to be an educator, I'm very aware of the difference between having somebody just tell you the answer and you figuring out the answer. So I don't want to be lecturing to people to say, you should be looking at this. This is the important part. Stop looking over there, you fool. I want to be saying, oh, here's a place for you to check out. And whatever you discover is your discovery. In most of the show, that first picture that you were talking about is much more simple in its composition, but the majority of the show is really like a visual playground for people to play in and look at and make whatever discoveries they can. And for me, the things that I remember from school are the things where I raised my hand and went, oh, teacher, I know, not the things that the teacher just flat out told me.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is photographer Christopher Rauschenberg. His show, Looking at India, is on now at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery from just January the 7th to the 30th, 2021. There is a picture called Jaipur 2. You're looking through an arch. I think it's a rooftop because there are trees just over the sort of parapet. Some little stairs going up. It's very, very plain. Everything is smooth. It reminds me of a video game where you just run around blasting, running around corners like, you know, Black Ops or Valorant or something like that. There's a sense that you're just sort of walking around an empty space. I mean, there's no people around. So yeah. What was that? Did you have to wait till there were no tourists around?
Yes. And that's also in the Jantar Mantar in Jaipur. The picture that I talked about earlier, that's kind of a large panorama of the place, has a whole bunch of people in it. I mean, it was very crowded. And so both of these frames were shot at the Jantar Mantar, but they weren't contiguous. So I took a picture from one spot at the Jantar Mantar, a picture from another spot, and put them together and made a sort of fictitious space that's very convincing, but it's not. If you go there and try to find that, you could find the halves of it, but it doesn't exist as a whole space.
The Jantar Mantar composite you're talking about is at the bottom left of that page on the Elizabeth Leach website.
Yes.
So that you're up on the roof there and you're shooting.
It's actually not a roof, it's just a ground, but there's trees in the background, but their feet are at the same height that ours are.
Why are there like staircases like Escher just going up to nowhere?
There's staircases everywhere. It's to get yourself on the right observatory point.
Oh, I see. They're for stand, going up and looking around from. And you kind of collaged them all as you were walking around with the camera in your head. You collaged them into something new.
I didn't actually collage them into something new until I got home, in this case. I mean, in the other pictures from there that are panoramas that were intended to be, from the moment I took them, I was like, okay, I'm starting off with the left and I'm moving to the right and it'll fit together and it'll be good. This one, I was just taking individual pictures and figured out that they could, once I had them, figured out that they could fit together to make an interesting space.
Yeah, yeah. To tell us a bit about this, going back to this bucket idea of, you know, being away, you're observing the world differently from when you're at home and everything's sort of common. how do you actively observe, say you're walking through a big train station? I mean, what kind of things do you look for?
Well, when I'm at home, I also want to photograph things that that are sort of very normal and have to do with the fabric of life. Mm-hmm. But it's easier when you're traveling because you notice the things that are different from they are at home. Mm-hmm. And the major part of photography is not something technical. The major part is paying attention and figuring out that there's something to photograph there. That's the hard part. And so there's on the Elizabeth Leach page, right next to the one that we've just been talking, there's a picture that's three, it's the first two sections of it were taken in Jaisalmer and the third one in Agra. And the major thing in the composition is just dirty towel that's thrown over this ornate carving, you know? and it's the sort of the texture of this sort of gray, dirty towel against this elaborate carving that's also kind of dirty and sort of a little bit wrecked up in this particular spot. So for me, that was an example of something that was visually beautiful. Or there's also a single frame picture in the show that's on the page where it's photographing in the Taj Mahal was built for Mumtaz Mahal as her mausoleum. And also in Agra, there's a mausoleum for her grandfather, I think it is. And there's a picture of somebody photographing this ornate carving on the building, and he's wearing a shirt that's covered with bananas.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this sort of intense shirt and this very elegant, geometric mosaic work on the temple. He was very intent in his photography, so he stood still a long time. So I was able to get a good shot of him. Yes, for me, that's an example of, it's a picture that combines this incredible tomb architecture with the sort of just crazy, cheap, wild shirt that somebody happened to be wearing, you know. So it's this mixture of the two.
Yeah. So the listeners probably, if they don't know this, they should. You're one of the founders of the Portland Grid Project, which seeks to divide Portland into a grid, and then people volunteer to go out and shoot within that little grid every month, and just to make a visual record of the city. And they go out and they shoot the funny stains on the floor and the weird walls and the everyday. That you've had that mentality for so long. I was wondering, how does it play into being in a very, crowded, stimulating place like India, especially in the big cities?
Yeah. I mean, the Grid Project actually started because it was one of my work to be about how the ordinary world around you is not ordinary. It's wonderful and you should look at it. But then I travel so much to these exotic, amazing places that I was worried that the underlying subtext of my work was drifting into territory of ordinary world is boring, you should go someplace really cool. So I wanted to do a project in Portland where I live, and I said, well, you know, gee, I photograph when I'm walking around and everything. I know the city really well. But we had a visiting photographer at Blue Sky, which is a gallery that I co-founded, photo gallery here in town. And she said, oh, could you drop me off at, she was doing a portrait of this Native American person. And I said, oh, yes, I know exactly where that is. It's only a block off. I have a friend who lives on Flavelle. It's only a block off of there. Yeah, I'll take you over there. So I went over. And even though it was only a block off of this main street that I'd been up and down a whole lot of times, it was a whole other world. It was much more like a rural street where I think it was actually paved, although there are many unpaved streets in Portland. And I just sort of went, wow, you only have to go a block off your regular route to discover things you haven't seen before. So I took a standard AAA map of the city, which has a grid of blue lines on it. So you can look up on the Street Finder, you can say, oh, where is Flavelle Street? And oh, here it's in G8, So I took that and I just took a pair of scissors and just cut the city up into 89 squares. And I thought, well, I'm just going to photograph one square per month and see what's there. And the squares are big. The square that contains downtown went all the way from the freeway through downtown to Andy and Bax in Southeast. Mm-hmm. So all of downtown fit in one square, along with the Central East Side Industrial District. But, you know, if you think about Portland, you don't think that downtown is 1% of the city. So I wanted to get out into the whole group. And then I thought, well, this would be a nice group project. It would be fun to have a bunch of us go out. So I contacted 11 other photographers who I thought were really good photographers who could figure out what to photograph, because we weren't going to have an editor or a leader on this project. Just everybody go photograph whatever they want in the city. And eventually we will, even though we're all just doing whatever we want, it will create a document of the city over time. And it's been going for 20 something years now, and it's been three rounds of the city. A round of the city took about 9.5 years. Look, when we went to Jaisalmer, which is probably the place that shows up most in these pictures, and there's the beautiful Jain temples with this incredible carving, the beautiful the sort of old town inner part of the city had beautifully wild colored textiles hanging everywhere to sell them to tourists. With these wonderful sort of narrow streets that are spatially very beautiful, because you have things that are close to you and then you kind of look down this narrow street as a viewer, your eye travels down this narrow street. So that was a place that we spent a lot of time. And, you know, we would go up into the old part of the city most of the time, but then, you know, the last day we were there, we just went wandering around the neighborhoods and found sort of crazy things that were not the sort of old town that was ready for tourists to come buy things and to look at things, and just kind of, you know, here's a cement mixer going over here, and here's a, you know, and just sort of the fabric of life for the people who live there.
Can you generalize this visual approach to the world of, you know, a sort of in more keen observation? Can you generalize that to a worldview, a way of thinking?
Well, I think for me, one of the things that's most exciting about photography is that you are literally looking through somebody else's eyes. So my appreciation of the visual world around me has to do with things that I have learned by looking at other photographers' work. My probably two biggest influences are Eugene Epje and Lee Friedlander, but I mean, If you look at the work of Deanne Arbus, some of your viewers will know her work, and it's these people that she's looking at that normally one wouldn't look at or pay any attention to. And you get on the bus in Portland, Oregon, and it's a very different experience if you've just been looking at a Deanne Arbus book, mm-hmm. and you really look at the sort of so-called ordinary people around you. Whoever came up with the phrase ordinary people, simply not paying attention. There's no such thing as an ordinary person. So for me, my goal in photography is to repay some of that debt that I have and to contribute to this sort of visual potluck, to bring a dish to the potluck that's not the same thing everybody else brought. It's not chips and dip like everybody else brought, but something odd. And I mean, this is an experience that people have. If you buy a new car, if you buy a Prius, you suddenly look around and say, geez, every third car in this city is a Prius. You could have noticed before, but you didn't, because you weren't tuned into it. As always, been really interesting talking to you. And the only thing I'll throw in as the last thing is that the picture of the Taj Mahal that's in the show, that only has one person standing in a very wide view of the Taj mm-hmm. Mahal, like a 180-degree angle of view. I had to stand there a long time to get each individual frame with nobody in it, or the one frame with one person in it. It was actually in a pretty good spot, so I let them be in it.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was photographer Christopher Rauschenberg. His show, Looking at India, is on at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery from January the 7th to the 30th, and it's also partially visible at elizabethleach.com. Thank you so much for doing Art Focus over Zoom, Christopher.
Thank you.
be tired and he take a little snooze. Tie him up when he's fast asleep, send him on a pleasant cruise. When he wake up on the sea, he's sure to think of me and you. To think about paint and to think about glue, what a jolly boring thing to do.
Andy, whoa, whoa, let's just scream, hang him on my wall. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all. Andy, whoa, whoa, let's just scream, hang him on my wall. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
Escuchando KBOO Portland.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes 5 de enero del 2020.